say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Wendy Weiser, who directs the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law, where she founded and directed the Center's Voting Rights and Elections Project, which has protected the voting rights of hundreds of thousands of citizens in recent years. Welcome to Background Briefing, Wendy Weiser.
Thank you for having me.
And the trial before a three-judge panel in Washington, D.C., to either uphold or strike down the Texas voter ID law, of course, has become quite politicized, if you will. Just a few days ago, addressing the NAACP in Houston, the Attorney General said, "We will not allow political pretext to disenfranchise American citizens of their most precious rights." And he went on to say, "Under the proposed law, concealed handgun licenses would be acceptable forms of photo ID, but student IDs would not. Many of those without IDs would have to travel great distances to get them, and some would struggle to pay for the documents they'd need to obtain them. We call those poll taxes." So where do we stand now in terms of the trial in Washington, D.C.?
Well, tomorrow is the last day of the hearing. That's before three judges in Washington, D.C., where Texas is trying to persuade the court that its new restrictive voter ID law was not passed with the purpose of discriminating against minorities and does not discriminate against minorities. And unfortunately, that's not what the evidence shows. But that is what's at stake. That's what it's at issue in this case is, you know, can Texas show that this is not discriminatory, that this will not harm Latinos and African Americans more than it harms other citizens?
But my understanding, Wendy Weiser, is that there's more at stake, and that is that under the Civil Rights Voting Rights Act of 1965, Section 5 requires preclearance to a number of states with a history of Jim Crow restrictions, etc. Texas falls under that. Isn't it likely that this case now before these judges could end up in the Supreme Court and Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act could be challenged?
Absolutely. Texas has, in bringing this case, Texas didn't only argue that its law was not discriminatory. It said even if it is, we shouldn't have to defend it in court. This Voting Rights Act should be struck down in its entirety. That's actually not before the court this week. The court is going to first decide whether or not Texas was able to show that its law was not discriminatory before considering that question. But that is definitely part of this case, and it's a part of everything that Texas is putting forward. Texas claims that it shouldn't have to show that its law is not discriminatory. And that's really unfortunate. Texas is one of a handful of states with a history of discriminating in voting rights. And those states, Congress found overwhelmingly in 2006, should have to show before they try to implement new voting changes that they're not discriminatory. You have a bad record. We don't trust that your laws aren't going to be discriminatory. And until you clean your record up, you have to show that your law is not discriminatory before you change your voting procedures. Texas, again, it's only a handful of states that are covered by this obligation, and Texas is one of them because it earned that.
So what are the steps then? You've got this three-judge panel. There's an expectation that they will strike down the Texas law and then it will be immediately appealed. The three-judge panel includes two Democrats and one Republican appointee. And then there's also another case working its way through the courts, a Shelby County, Alabama lawsuit. So I guess one way or the other, Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act is going to get to the Supreme Court. And when do you think that'll happen?
Yeah, certainly sometime within the next year, we are going to see Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act before the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court upheld the law very narrowly, or just dodged a case challenging the constitutionality of the Voting Rights Act a couple of years ago, and it raised some questions that people are now litigating and thought, and we've seen now an unprecedented number of attacks on the Voting Rights Act. Really an about-face for many states because the Voting Rights Act was approved with overwhelming bipartisan majorities back in 2006 and signed into law by being a real sea change in people now pushing back against what is widely acknowledged as the most successful piece of civil rights legislation. You know, it's too early to predict what the judges are going to do in this Texas case. But there is a direct appeal on Voting Rights Act cases to the Supreme Court. The Shelby County, Alabama case, a three-judge court, already said that the Voting Rights Act was a lawful exercise of Congress's authority. It upheld the Voting Rights Act. And that is likely to be, we're likely to see papers filed in the Supreme Court in the next month by those who were challenging the Voting Rights Act. It's hard to tell which case will end up in the Supreme Court first.
Again, I'm speaking with Wendy Weiser, who directs the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law, where she founded and directed the center's Voting Rights and Elections Project, which has protected the voting rights of hundreds of thousands of citizens in recent years. So the last time that this issue was revisited, we don't have a vote from the Supreme Court as a precursor or a harbinger of what might happen when it reaches the Supreme Court?
Well, you know, the Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of the Voting Rights Act a few decades ago. I mean, the similar right. challenges were brought, and the Supreme Court strongly said that this was a constitutional and important exercise of Congress's authority. In fact, Congress had a strong reason to protect the American citizen's fundamental right to vote against what was a real strong history of discrimination in a number of states. And the Congress found again in 2006 a similar record of just discriminatory tactic after discriminatory tactic. And so the court considered this case a challenge in 2007, and it avoided the challenge. It did express some doubts as to the constitutionality of the act, but it very strongly avoided striking down what is clearly the most important piece of civil rights legislation. So it's very difficult to predict what a court would do in this case. It would be a really dramatic and act for the court to overturn this kind of cornerstone of our civil rights infrastructure.
Well, that certainly doesn't stop people like myself from being a little skeptical. We've seen the court make some fairly radical rulings with Citizens United, and you know, the healthcare bill only squeaked by, and even in victory, there are some parts of that ruling that trouble some people who think that it could actually lead to some rather radical libertarian overturning of things like Title IX. So, you know, pardon me for being a little bit dubious about this court in terms of its propensity to take small cases and blow them up into radical rulings.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I certainly hold out hope that the Voting Rights Act is still on secure ground. We've seen, you know, more and more evidence this year that it is just really needed. Over the past 2 years, we've really seen a massive wave of new laws making it harder for eligible American citizens to vote. And it's these laws have all been targeting especially African Americans and Latinos and other minorities that are protected by the Voting Rights Act. And so there's really and really a disproportionate number of these laws have been passed in the states that have a history of discrimination and are covered by the Voting Rights Act. So it's really strongly needed, and the evidence is only mounting, and that should strengthen the case before the Supreme Court.
So, Wendy Weiser, in terms of the Attorney General Holder's remarks last Tuesday before the NAACP, and, of course, he was followed by Mitt Romney, who also spoke there, making no mention of voting rights and of this kind of across-the-board effort on the part of Republican governors around the states to pass these new voter ID laws that your center some time ago did a study indicating that as much as 5 million or as many as 5 million eligible voters could be denied the vote in 2012. He pointed out, Holder pointed out last Tuesday, that 25% of African Americans do not have the type of IDs Texas require to vote, while just 8% of whites do not have a valid ID. And the idea that a concealed handgun permit is okay, but community college student ID is not, certainly raises one's suspicions about the notion that this is all about preventing voter fraud. If it ever gets to the Supreme Court, could you make the argument that Holder is making, that this is a poll tax, because poll taxes were deemed unconstitutional by the 24th Amendment?
Yeah, this is certainly an argument that is available to be made before the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has already made clear in an earlier voter ID case that came before it that states that are trying to impose voter ID requirements have to make the kinds of ID that they're requiring accessible and free to all citizens who want to use them for voting. So, and if they are not, then that would be a poll tax. And there's mounting evidence that not only are states not doing that effectively, but there are also indirect costs that are a huge barrier for many Americans to getting voter ID. So, for example, in most states, you need to have a birth certificate in order to get the free photo ID that the states are supposedly going to offer. But the birth certificates typically cost around $20 or so, and that in itself is more than what the poll tax was back in 1974.
Again, I'm speaking with Wendy Weiser, who directs the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law, where she founded and directs the center's Voting Rights and Election Project, which has protected the voting rights of hundreds of thousands of citizens in recent years. Now, yesterday, before this three-judge panel where the Texas voter ID law is being challenged under the Voting Rights Act for pre-clearance, Texas is fighting it, and as we've mentioned, if they lose, they apparently intend to take this to the Supreme Court to challenge the very nature of Section 5 and the Voting Rights Act itself. In testimony yesterday, Henry Flores, a political science professor and dean of the Graduate School of St. Mary's University in San Antonio, he said that there have been 100 pieces of Texas legislation that he suggested there is a legislative bias against the growing population of Hispanic immigrants. And he felt that that was what this was about. This is really not a voter ID law so much as an anti-immigrant bill.
And that is one of the key issues in this case. You know, there is a significant evidence that this law was passed with the intention of discriminating against Latinos and African Americans in Texas. It was a very highly charged environment around the passage of this law, and really unusual procedures used. They declared emergency legislation and bypassed all the usual legislative procedures in order to get these voter ID, this highly restrictive voter ID bill through the process. And what's really at stake here is the right of hundreds of thousands of eligible voters in Texas to participate in the elections. And it's not just minorities, it's hundreds of thousands of people of all races and creeds, and it does disproportionately affect Latinos and African Americans as well. But even according to Texas's own conservative figures, you know, between 605 and 795,000 registered Texas voters don't have state-issued photo IDs that they're requiring. So the stakes are really large.
Well, this is an extraordinary coincidence, Wendy Weiss. I just did an interview a couple of days ago with the leading pollster in the state of Pennsylvania, who was neither a Democrat nor a Republican. So I think he gave a very objective analysis of the new voting restrictions that have been passed in Pennsylvania, which, of course, is a key swing state. The head of the Republican House in the state house in Pennsylvania let the cat out of the bag by speaking at a Republican event where he said that the law they just passed will ensure that Romney wins the state of Pennsylvania. And when they passed the law in Pennsylvania, they said, oh, only a handful of people are going to be affected, those that would be committing fraud. It turns out that the figures of people who are being eligible voters are going to be ineligible because of this new voter ID law in Pennsylvania is almost identical to the Texas one, 800,000.
That's right. And politicians really shouldn't be allowed to manipulate our voting rights for our own benefit. What people don't realize are that these laws that we're seeing in Texas and Pennsylvania are not reasonable ID laws that just ask people to identify themselves by showing ID they do have. They cherry-pick the IDs. They're highly restrictive with a very narrow form of IDs. And unlike laws that we've seen in the past, there's no process for people who don't have those small number of IDs to go through to demonstrate their identity and still vote a ballot that will count. And that is that makes them dramatically different than anything else we've seen beforehand and dramatically more harmful to voters who get caught in the net.
Well, just in closing, Wendy Weiser, we've learned some time back that a lot of these laws, and they've been passed in 11 states, and that many ways that these are predetermined laws drafted by ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which since the shooting of the young man in Florida, a lot of the corporate sponsors have left it because one of the laws that ALEC pushed throughout the states was the Stand Your Ground law. But more importantly, in terms of what we're talking about, they also drafted these model laws that have been enacted in 11 states, these voter ID laws that have appear to be targeting registered Democratic voters. And it makes you wonder how much this will become an election year issue and how much in this country you can make a case about the sanctity of democracy itself. One would think that most Americans, being fair-minded, would feel that this is really beyond the pale, that you know, the reason you have an election is that it is a level playing field and that the person who wins deserves to win, not by fair means, not by foul means.
That's absolutely right. This country was founded on a creed of political equality, that all men are created equal. And it's just wrong to pass laws that will exclude some groups of Americans from the political process and to do so for partisan political gain, not with on a fair playing field. And that's exactly what's going on here. And these are laws that are hiding what they're actually trying to do and what they're actually accomplishing. And it's also, in that way, it's doubly harmful because people don't realize, you know, what's going on and what effect that this is going to have. And there's good news, though. There's been real successful pushback. The courts have been, so far, we've seen at least two courts in Wisconsin rejecting the photo ID laws that were passed in that state. We have seen the Department of Justice pushing back very strongly against the South Carolina and Texas laws. There's a lawsuit pending in Pennsylvania. So the story's not over. As of today, of those 11 states that you're talking about, only three of them are slated to go into effect in 2012 unless they're blocked by a court. Now, that might change depending on what happens with the Texas trial, for example. But right now, we only see Kansas, Pennsylvania, and Tennessee will have those in effect. So There's been some pushback, and the story's not over yet, but it is clearly an election year issue. It will clearly have an enormous effect on who can vote and how they can vote, and it is clearly a matter of fundamental fairness that we get this right.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Wendy Weiser.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Wendy Weiser, who directs the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law, where she founded and directs the center's Voting Rights and Elections Project, which has protected the voting rights of hundreds of thousands of citizens in recent years. We're going to take a brief station break and be back in a moment talking about the prolific theft of gasoline in oil-rich Nigeria.